There are three readings this morning. The first is taken from Exodus chapter 4, verses 10 to 16. You'll find it on page 61 in the Pew Bible, page 61. Moses said to the Lord, O Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. The Lord said to him, Who gave man his mouth? Who makes him deaf or mute? Who gives him sight or makes him blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, I will help you speak, and I will teach you what to say. But Moses said, O Lord, please send someone else to do it. Then the Lord's anger burnt against Moses, and he said, What about your brother Aaron, the Levite? I know he can speak well. He is already on his way to meet you. And his heart will be glad when he sees you. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth. I will help both of you speak, and I will teach you what to do. He will speak to the people for you, and it will be as if he were your mouth and as if you were God to him. Sorry about that. The second reading is taken from Acts chapter 9, verses 1 to 6, and I will also do verse 15 and 16. You'll find it on page 1102 in the Pew Bible, Acts 9, 1 to 6, and 15 and 16. Saul's conversion. Meanwhile, Saul was still breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's disciples. He went to the high priest and asked him for letters to the synagogues in Damascus, so that if he found any there who belonged to the way, whether men or women, he might take them as prisoners to Jerusalem. As he neared Damascus on his journey, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. He fell to the ground and heard a voice say to him, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? Who are you, Lord? Saul asked. I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting, he replied. Now get up and go into the city, and you will be told what you must do. And on to verse 15. He did go to Damascus, but he had lost his sight. There in Damascus, but the Lord said to Ananias, who was a Christian, Go, this man is my chosen instrument to carry my name before the Gentiles and their kings and before the people of Israel. I will show him how much he must suffer for my name. The third reading is from John chapter 11, verses 53 to 56, and you'll find it on page 1079 in the Pew Bible. John 11, verses 53 to 56. And this is about the plot to kill Jesus. So from that day on, they plotted to take his life. Therefore, Jesus no longer moved about publicly among the Jews. Instead, he withdrew to a region near the desert, to a village called Ephraim, where he stayed with his disciples. When it was almost time for the Jewish Passover, many went up from the country to Jerusalem for their ceremonial cleansing before the Passover. They kept looking for Jesus, And as they stood in the temple area, they asked one another, "What do you think? Isn't he coming to the feast at all?" May the Lord add his blessing to these readings from his holy word.
Now it's my great privilege and pleasure to invite my friend, Mr. Leslie Mackay, forward to offer a reflection on today's scriptures. Leslie.
Friend, you'll never know how much that handshake meant to me just now. Maybe by the end of my chatter, you will see what I mean. Lord, open our eyes to see the work of your hand all around us. Open our ears to hear the good news, and open our hearts to welcome Jesus. The question I'm trying to sort out today, everyone, is where are you going? Where am I going? Where are we all going? And you know, a question like that can be dealt with in so many different ways, depending who's asking, who's answering, what the situation is. Maybe you're meeting someone on the street and you say, "Where are you going?" And they say, "I'm going to the shop for some milk." Fine. But sometimes a question like that can be quite challenging. Further along the street, you might meet another friend and say, "Where are you going today?" And they might say, "Well, the surgery has asked me to come and have a blood test." I don't know what all that's about. Quite challenging. But many questions that people are asked, they sometimes think they know the answer to it, and they know where they have to go in response, and then it turns out to be so different from what they anticipated. Now, last week, Joshua gave us a synopsis of the whole story of Moses in 5 minutes flat to the children. Well done, Joshua. And today, I wanted to take one aspect of this passage that we have from Exodus that Joshua picked up with the children. I don't want to go over it all again, but after all those excuses that Moses gave, what was the crucial thing that made him give in, as it were, and say to the Lord, "All right, Lord, I'll try and give it my best shot"? Well, as far as I'm concerned, I think the thing that broke the ice with Moses was when the Lord said, "You can count on me. I'll be with you all the way. I'll tell you what you have to do. I'll show you what you have to do. I'll even put words in your mouth, and I'll make sure that you've got plenty of help." And you know, when we've got an assurance from the Lord like that, who wouldn't try to give their best shot? I'm wondering, friends, if you can think of a particular incident in your life, or maybe a particular question that was asked, and at the time it seemed quite a simple thing, really, quite straightforward. But as the years have gone on and you look back on it, you can see how significant it was. I want to share one from my own life. I was just a few weeks after my 18th birthday when I went to study in Aberdeen. I was booked into lodgings halfway up Union Street on the south side. And there were 5 of us who were students. There were 4 of us who were young apprentices, and there were another 2 young lads who'd already started on their career. In my day, Freshers' Week wasn't Freshers' Week. It was 2 days. It was the Thursday and the Friday before your classes started on the Monday. And so we were there for that. And then at the weekend, some of the guys in the lodgings who could go home for the weekend went home. But those of us, the students in particular, were staying over, of course. And at tea time on the Saturday, we were sharing what we had discovered about the university so far, and we were also sharing with each other the courses that we were going to embark on. And then just in that conversation, James Smith from Buckey said, "What church will we go to tomorrow?" Wait a minute. This is only our third day here. This is only our third tea time together. What church will we go to tomorrow? Next morning, five of us went up the road a little bit to the corner of Bonacord Street, where you'll still see a building that looks like a church, but it hasn't been used as a church for some years. But in our day, it was the West Church of St. Andrews. And there we were. After lunch, we thought we would take a wander around Union Street and up and down and try to get to know our bearings a little bit. And on the way down, not far from the lodgings, on that side of the street, there was another church. And James Smith said, "Hey guys, look at this board. There's an evening service here. Shall we try that?" Friends, unbelievably, maybe, for the next 2 years that those of us who stayed in that lodging together before we went separate ways, every Sunday morning we went up to the West Church of St. Andrews to hear the Reverend Sidney Still. And in the evening we went over to Gilcomston Church, just across the road and up a little bit, to hear the Reverend Willie Still, who was a renowned evangelical preacher in Aberdeen at the time, and still was for many years. Now, when James asked that question, "What church will we go to tomorrow?" How did I know? How could I possibly know that that was going to be the beginning of my need and my practice of coming to worship in church every Sunday, right up till now? So a question might be simple, but the lasting effect can be lifelong. I hope that you can maybe recall something like that in your life. If we had time, maybe we could all take part and tell each other. But just think about it and see how important it is. Then the next reading that I have is about Saul. Now, this man Saul, Anne read, was a murderous character when it came to this new group called the People of the Way. He absolutely hated them. They were taking Jews away from the traditional worship, and they were telling people about this man Jesus, and it just wouldn't do. And when messages came from Damascus that the People of the Way were growing in great numbers and they were causing problems there, Saul went to the authorities and he said, "I'll go." So, as our American friends in the past anyway might say, he gathered a posse and off he went to Damascus. He hadn't quite reached there, as you would hear in Anne's reading, when he had this blinding physical experience, but note also a blinding spiritual experience. When it turned out that Jesus was the one that he was persecuting, it made him reevaluate what his whole life was about, and especially what he was doing just now and where he was going and what he was going to do. So he did go into Damascus. Now, his reputation, Saul's reputation against the People of the Way, was well known, and it had reached Damascus long before him. And according to the social media of that day, they knew that he was coming. So the People of the Way weren't exactly going to roll out a red carpet for Saul coming into Damascus. And then we hear about this man, Ananias. He was a disciple. He was a new Christian. And he wasn't too keen on Saul. But he had a very clear message from the Lord, a really important message, as I point out in a moment. He Lord said to him, Ananias, you've got to go and find Saul. You've got to look after him. You've got to tell him about Jesus. You've got to tell him what the gospel is, and you've got to tell him how he can help. He said, this is the man who will be my instrument to take my name to the Gentiles and to the people of Israel. And so Ananias did. This man Saul's name was changed. I bet you all know. And if you don't, he was Paul. The same Paul, friends, who has written all these letters that we have access to in the New Testament. Letters to the Corinthians, the Philippians, the Thessalonians, the Galatians, and even letters to the Romans, although he never got to Rome. What was all that about? Well, when he started on his missions, and he went on lots of missions, Paul went to just what you might call young churches, churches that were just getting going, and he stayed with them, and he taught them, and he showed them what they should be doing, and he told them about Jesus and what taking Jesus into your life was all about. And then he moved on to another one to build that up and strengthen the people there. But he never forgot where he had been. And so he wrote back to them as he developed his Christian thinking himself. And I would suggest to you, friends, that Saul's experience, as we call it at Damascus, a Damascus experience, has turned out to be a Damascus experience for all Christians who've had access to Paul's words ever since, right down to ourselves. You wouldn't think that such a small event on the outskirts of Damascus would have so much power. I have been a bit distracted when I've been thinking about this particular story, everybody, by what's going on in Damascus at the moment. And I have concluded that what we need there are a whole lot of present-day Pauls to try to sort out all the problems, not just in Syria, but wherever there are terrible things going on, to help people to lead lives that will point to reconciliation and peace. And that's what they need in Damascus. But in the days that we're reading about, who they needed in Damascus was Paul. And didn't he do well, as another famous recent laid dead person used to say? Billy Graham, you know, started his preaching in tent missions in the United States. If you've read any of the books about him, if you know more about him than I do, you'll know that that's what happened. And he started going to these tent missions and being invited to be a preacher. Ever since he started, Billy Graham had the same questions and the same comments time after time again. And his question to people was always, where are you going in your life? What are you doing with your life? Have you not heard about Jesus? Let me tell you about Jesus. Now, would you not consider giving your life to Jesus? And from those tent missions, friends, Billy Graham went on Christian crusades, as they were called, all over the world. I was privileged to hear him twice, both times in Pittodrie Stadium. What's the old one as it is at the moment? Maybe I'll have to go and hear someone, not Billy, but someone in the new stadium. Hopefully that will happen. And the first time was when I was a student, way back in the mid-50s. And my friend James Smith from Bucky, he was a bit of a thorn in everybody's side when it came to these sort of things, because he said, did you know that Billy Graham's coming? Do you know he's going to be at Pittodrie tonight? Why don't we go and hear him? Okay, so a whole lot of us went. Now, I can't recall that anyone on that occasion went forward to Billy Graham's call. But what I do actually still remember in this dim memory of mine is how much it engaged our conversations for days on end. Billy Graham may you rest in peace. But may your message never rest. Some years ago, friend, our Kirk session arranged a session conference at Littlewood House, which is just a few miles west of the Bridge of Afford. And the theme that was chosen for the conference was a book whose title was, If You Want to Walk on Water, You'll Have to Get Out of the Boat. Have a think of that, friends. I wonder which disciple was central to that story. If you want to walk on water, you've got to get out of the boat. Hopefully, has anyone got it? It's Peter. The disciples were doing what was comfortable to them. They were out on the Lake of Galilee. They were fishing. And then they saw this figure in the distance coming towards them on the water. They were scared stiff. They couldn't see what it was, and it looked ghost-like even, until someone put their head above the edge of the boat a little bit and said, you know this, I think it might be the Lord. And Peter said, as he looked up, it is the Lord. And he got up and put his foot on the edge of the boat, and someone said, where are you going, Peter? And he said, I'm going to run towards him. As his feet touched the water, the realization of what he was about to do swamped him. Where are you going now, Peter? If you're only going one place, and that's to the bottom of the sea. No, he didn't. The Lord held out a strong hand of rescue and probably said something like, Peter, oh, Peter, let's get back into that boat. Do you know, just as Moses was comfortable herding his flocks in the land of Midian, that was his comfort zone, and he had to leave it. And the fishing boat for the fishermen disciples, that was their comfort zone. But if they were going to take on the challenges that Jesus had laid before them during those 3 years when they went with him and when he ministered to them, they were going to have to move out of their comfort zone. I would suggest to you all, friends here and friends who are listening elsewhere, that we all have comfort zones, or maybe just even one comfort zone. And when we're pushed and pulled and are asked to try something else, particularly in the witness that we have in our church and in our church life, it's not always easy. But again, if we don't get out of our comfort zone, how will we ever know what we can achieve? And remember what the Lord said to Moses, you're not going to be alone. I'm going to be with you. My third little text, everybody, is about what was happening with Jesus and the disciples. When they were in the area of Galilee and in regions nearer to Jerusalem, they were always busy. But when Jesus said to the disciples, where I'm going next is to the Passover in Jerusalem, they were horrified. They said, are you sure, Master? Do you know what happened the last time we went there? The Jews were doing everything they could to arrest you and us, and we had to escape. We were lucky to get off with our lives. Jesus said, I'm going to the Passover in Jerusalem. And if I read the text further back than that, I think it was maybe Thomas who said, well, if you're going, I'm going, and we're all going. And they got to this village, not that far from Jerusalem. If you look to the east from Jerusalem, you go down into a valley. It's called the Kidron Valley. and you go up the other side, which is the Mount of Olives. And this village is not far from there. Now, people were coming and going from Jerusalem all the time, particularly because of the Passover. And the rumors spread. And the rumors were, did you hear that Jesus is there? Do you think he's going to come to the feast? Will he come to the Passover? Have you seen him? And even in the temple courts, they were saying, I haven't seen him yet. Has anyone seen Jesus? And then someone said, maybe he won't come at all. Friends, we're just so near coming into Easter now. Will we go this Easter and meet Jesus? That's our challenge this Easter. I want to finish by sharing with you what's on a little card that I keep in this pocket here. See, you'll never be able to see what that is. But this is a little card which has a little piece on it called Footprints. And I have actually prepared better cards like this for you. And I'm hoping that you'll accept a card from me after the service. And if you wish, then take a card for friends. If you're not familiar with Footprints, let me quickly tell you what it's about. A man had a dream that he was walking on the sand with the Lord by his side. And as he looked down from his dream at the two figures, he could see two sets of footprints as they walked along the sand. And events from the man's life came flashing up before them, some of them happy. But there were some of them who caused the man trouble again and sadness, because there were times when things didn't go too well for him. And when he looked down at the figures on those occasions, he was absolutely shocked. Shocked, friends, to see only one set of footprints. And he turned to the Lord and he said, Lord, when I gave my life to you, you promised that you would be with me always. How is it that when I needed you most, you weren't there? And Jesus said to him, my dear precious child, when you see one set of footprints, that's when I was carrying you. Friends, will we cast our burdens onto Jesus this Easter? Will we walk with the Lord? Will we put our hand in the hand of the man from Galilee? I've asked the praise band to help me to sing this one with you because it may not be familiar. So we're going to sing it through, and then I would invite you to stand as usual and we'll sing it through twice. So put your hand in the hand of the man from Galilee, Jim.
Hand in hand.